Ryan Seacrest here. Every great barbecue has one secret ingredient. Patience. You do a little, and you wait a little. And while your dinner does its thing, you got a few minutes to yourself, right? Well, kick back with a little Chumba Casino. A flip and a spin. Who knows? Maybe even a login bonus. It is the perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Teron Davenport, TED, joins us now. TED, I know you're busy this time of year, so we really appreciate your time, appreciate you for joining us. So there's been a lot of chatter about a potential Ryan Tannehill trade. Of course, the report last week that the Jets could potentially be interested in trading for Ryan Tannehill. What's the latest that you've heard on that? And do you think it really is, could be a legitimate possibility that the Titans would trade Ryan Tannehill away?
Yeah, I think it could be a definitely possibility. I don't think it's likely, but just like anything else, with a new GM coming in, you have to look at all things. And we know what Rand Carthon said, that he wants to continue to evaluate everything. But I haven't heard that any trade is imminent. I know there is interest from the Jets, but from what I've heard and what has been reported is he's the third or fourth option after a Derek Carr, after an Aaron Rodgers.
So, TD, with that being said, it sort of seems as if, or it's being put out as if, the Titans are looking to make a move at quarterback. So if they do make that trade, not to say it's going to happen, because I think it's more likely that it doesn't than it do. If indeed it does, do you think then they move up in the draft, or do you think they stay put and try to get a quarterback, say, in free agency?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's the whole thing that's really interesting, is you have a couple teams above the Titans, obviously within the division, in the Colts and Texans, who are very likely to move up to one. So if they're going to move up, if it's a guy that they fall in love with, they're probably going to have to make a trade with the Bears. And we saw the reports that, you know, there has been contact. And I think if they were to do that, the guy that they would pick is probably C.J. Stroud, just because of the placement and accuracy perspective. I think that's the one that they would go for. But it would take a lot of guts for Rand Carthon to come in, and one of his first things he does draft personnel-wise is move up to the number one pick and take a quarterback. So I don't think it's likely. There are some guys, you know, a lot of people like Will Levis, you know, some people say that he is going to be the top pick just because of the measurables, you know, his ability to throw the ball 70 yards with ease and the athleticism. He's drawn comparisons to Josh Allen. So that's a guy. Obviously, you know, you look at, as I mentioned, Stroud, Bryce Young, Anthony Richardson is a name that's really intriguing, because you wonder if they stay at 11, he will likely be there. And he's someone who a lot of scouts and personnel folks feel has the most upside out of all of these quarterbacks. You watch him, as very Cam Newton-like. So there will be some options there, but I doubt they do anything.
Now, TD, another position that is of need for the Tennessee Titans, and I sort of did my breakdown of five guys that I thought, you know, had the possibly the ability to be drafted by the Tennessee Titans, the wide receiver position. I look at Jordan Addison, or whether it's Quentin Johnston. I think Quentin Johnston may be gone before the Titans pick at 11. But if he's not, then, man, I can't see them drafting a receiver after they drafted one last year. They may go offensive tackle, or, like you said, a quarterback. But what receivers beside, because my five was Jordan Addison, Jackson Smith, Njigba,
yeah,
Quentin Johnston, and then I threw the two Tennessee guys in, Jalen Hyde and Cedric Tillman. But my dark horse was Jaden Reed. I don't know if you've watched much of him, but I just like his makeup. I like what he's able to do, not only from the receiver position, outside, inside, but also he's a excellent punt returner. So just Jordan Addison or Quentin Johnston, which one of those guys you think fits best with the Tennessee Titans?
That's a good question. You know, Quentin Johnston is so he's intriguing, right? Because you see the wild plays and you see him as far as the size is concerned. But the thing that I wonder is, can he really play to that size, right? Because how many times do you see him jumping up to catch the ball, but he's catching it at his waist or at his chest rather than truly high pointing it? You see that a lot. So that's something. And then there are times where he disappears in games. So I don't know if I would use that pick on him. Jordan Addison is very impressive, a smooth operator as far as the routes are concerned. I know his initial receiver coach when he was at Pitt won the Blentikoff Award, Brandon Marion, and he spoke glowingly about him as far as his work ethic and just what he does from day to day, catching the ball really well with his hands. So if I had to go out of the two, I would say Addison. I like him better as a product. I think he's more polished, but to be honest with you, the receiver I like in this draft, I probably wouldn't go at 11. But if you haven't gotten a chance to watch Zay Flowers from Boston College, check him out. He's so impressive. He reminds me of, like, I'll give you an old name, Joey Galloway. Mm-hmm. He reminds me of Galloway, Brandon Cooks, as far as, like, the ability, especially Cooks, you know, to play above his size. He's a guy that will make contested catches, you know, even though he's 5'10", very explosive, and that's the Joey Galloway part that really stands out to me. So he's someone, and no wonder you mentioned Reed, that there are a lot of similarities between him and yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Even though, because he is a Spartan, correct?
Absolutely. But I had to throw that in there, JD. Yeah, because what I've seen in the last 2 years, now his numbers dipped this year, but they had a lot of problems on offense in general. But his ability to play inside, outside, and double as your punt returner, I think that makes him valuable.
Yeah, and he impressed in Mobile. He was one of the guys that, you know, consistently was being mentioned as someone who, quote-unquote, made some money. So you saw him running by DBs and stuff like that in one-on-ones. I know that's, you know, slanted towards the receiver, but still, he was running by him, and that's something to make note of.
Teron Davenport is with us. And Teron, I think it's intriguing. I know the reports are that Derek Carr visited the Jets this weekend, and so that's one to really watch, I guess, this week to see if anybody bites early. It's the old saying, right? A bird in hand is worth two in the bush, right? Because he's the one guy you can jump in and sign, and right now you can say, I got my guy. And the Jets are so pivotal in that, because if they don't, you know they're going to be in the sweepstakes for Aaron Rodgers, and that's uncertain. Who knows where that's going to go? But I'm curious in particular if the Jets like what they saw over the weekend, had, you know, maybe on the same page with numbers, because that would take them off the board for what looks like it could be a very crazy carousel with quarterbacks.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And additionally to being the bird in hand, he's the guy you don't have to give up draft capital for outside of Garoppolo, right? You know, you'll have to, he's a free agent, but I'm curious how that works, because there's so many dominoes. Because you look at Nathaniel Hackett coming on to be the OC, and now people are drawing ties to Aaron Rodgers, and we know he's on his darkness retreat. Must be nice to, you know, do that, I guess. But you got that, and then you look at Todd Downing becoming the pass game coordinator there with the Jets, and now people are drawing parallels to Ryan Tannehill. So that Jets part of it is really integral as far as when you look at the veteran quarterback carousel that could happen. And I think that's where it starts. But we'll just have to see how it all falls into line.
Right. And, you know, if you're the Titans, I'm curious if there have been any conversations just behind the scenes of just sort of trying to gauge what the market would be if you were to even consider. And like you said, I'm with you. I don't think it's likely that the Titans would trade Ryan Tannehill. But I think just out of due diligence, just gauging what somebody might offer for him would be important information to have. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, I fully agree. You definitely want to know, right? So you put the feeler out there. But, you know, honestly, this is another reason why you don't come out and say, hey, he's not the guy that we're going to have, because you don't want to show your hand, which is, I don't know why the Raiders did that, and look how it backfired. They weren't able to get any compensation for him. They had to release him. But I think that's definitely something that you want to kind of put a feeler out there, see what type of interest can be generated. But I think it comes down to what's your decision, right? Are you going to next year go all in for a Drake May, for a Caleb Williams? And if you're going to do that, obviously you don't want to punt on this season, but you want to get as much ammunition to move up so you could go get that guy. So it's a lot of things at work, and that's the interesting part of this, because you have veterans on the team, Kevin Byard, right? You know, guys that deserve to be on a winner. But how much can you win right now with Ryan Tannehill? And that's what they have to figure out.
Yeah, I think that's a very important question. Last one for me, Teron. You said Tannehill is the third or fourth option for some of these teams because you have to trade for him, right? It's not anything you're gauging his talent and where he is in his career, but it's also you have to compensate the Titans if you want Tannehill to be in your mix. So let's give a hypothetical that the Jets don't sign Carr. Then they strike out on Rodgers. Garoppolo signs elsewhere, and they're sitting there in the middle of the offseason going, man, we still have Wilson. We haven't gotten a new quarterback. We want a new quarterback. So if it's late in the offseason and some of these other dominoes have fallen and the Titans are blown away for a trade offer for Tannehill, the question would be, if you're considering this for the Titans, what are the other options? Like, who would be your quarterback in a scenario you consider trading Tannehill?
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing. So it's like, okay, do you want to go into a year with, you know, as a Jacoby Brissett, a Teddy Bridgewater as your quarterback? And, yeah, it'll save you, around $18 million in cap space. But even trading him, Tannehill, that is, that doesn't mean that all his money is off the books. That $18.8 is going to be there regardless. So that trade offer is going to have to be pretty significant for them to move off of it, because if you do that, right, and you turn around and you sign a Jimmy Garoppolo, for instance, who's probably going to be $24, $25 million, now you're at 25 plus 18, 43. Is it really worth, you know, going up $6 million? Can you do that? I don't think there's a difference enough to do that, to be honest with you. So you have to factor that into play. And then also, like I said, as a GM coming in, and even as a coach, right, Mike Vrabel, Rand Carthon, they have to be able to look these guys in the face and tell them, hey, we're going to do everything we can to give you guys the best shot to win now. No player, no veteran is trying to hear, hey, next year is when we're going to – no, this is the year we're working for. Let's win this year. That's the mindset of each of these players.
TD Teron Davenport is with us. We appreciate you, TD. We'll chat with you next week.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you. And let me plug, I'm down here in New Orleans at the HBCU Combine. Make sure you guys check it out throughout
I'm
the week.
It
there's
now.
The Legacy Bowl. Yeah, there's some guys down here, definitely some guys that could play. It's a great opportunity. I'm a former HBCU player, so I really love the fact that these guys are getting to be showcased. So check it out.
Appreciate that, TD. Awesome. Enjoy it down there. Enjoy the food. Safe travels home.
For sure. Appreciate it.
All right, coming up next, an interesting coaching move in the NFL. Why would he make that move? And also, what does that mean as far as the Titans are concerned? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game. So I think a very shocking, at least to me, I was surprised by this move, a shocking coaching move in the NFL that came out over the weekend. Eric Bieniemy has been named the offensive coordinator in Washington. Mm-hmm. Now, I know it's not a lateral move, because Eric Bieniemy is going from not being the primary play caller in Kansas City to being the primary play caller in Washington. I get it. That is a step up. But I'll go back to when the Titans requested to interview Eric Bieniemy. And Josina Anderson came out and said Matt Nagy has not yet responded, and Eric Bieniemy is focusing on head coaching positions. And I understood that. If Matt Nagy wasn't interested, maybe he looked at it like Eric Bieniemy is looking for his next big move, his head coaching opportunity. Because he's had several interviews over the last several years. He interviewed for 5 vacant head coaching positions last year alone. So maybe Matt Nagy looked at it like Eric Bieniemy is going to get a head coaching opportunity. Matt Nagy could be promoted to offensive coordinator. So those two wanting to stay put in Kansas City until that next really big, obvious step presented itself, I understood that. But what I don't understand is Eric Bieniemy said to the Titans, hey, look, I'm looking for head coaching opportunities, and then takes the offensive coordinator job in Washington. And Ron Rivera has already come out and said he wants Sam Howell to be the starting quarterback in 2023. Sam Howell has 19 pass attempts in the NFL. Ron Rivera is on the hot seat. This really is kind of a prove it year for Ron Rivera. Is can you get this team into the playoffs? Can you win games consistently? And the Washington Commanders could be going through an ownership change. So you have an unproven young quarterback. Mm-hmm. You have a head coach that I think, you know, if you don't have a big year this year, Ron Rivera could be on his way out outside of Washington, and you could have a new owner looming. I don't see how this is an attractive job for Eric Bieniemy. I understand the really unfortunate truth that Eric Bieniemy is facing, that he has to get out of Kansas City to prove himself, which I say it's unfortunate because Doug Peterson, Nathaniel Hackett, Matt Nagy, all guys who didn't call plays in their former stops, that was a benefit of the doubt that they did get, not being primary play callers, and now they move on or went on to head coaching opportunities. So I understand that, but for Eric Bieniemy to turn the Titans away and to say, I want to focus on head coaching opportunities, and then to accept what I think is a very unattractive job in Washington, I don't really get it.
Yeah, it's one of those decisions that is made, and you look at it from afar like, man, why is he leaving? One, why is he leaving Kansas City to go to Washington, who doesn't have a proven quarterback? They have a few pieces. They have a hell of a defense. Mm-hmm. They got a few pieces on offense, but we know if you don't have that quarterback, it's going to be hard to try to win in the National Football League. So you look at it and you say, why did he do that? Well, I mean, you understand why he did it. Because, you know, unless and until he gets out of Andy Reid's shadow, which is, I think, unfair because, again, none of this is being thrown around when it comes to Nagy or Peterson or anybody else that coached under Andy Reid. The knock on them wasn't, oh, they are Andy Reid disciples and Andy Reid called the plays. No, they were just another line in line with the Andy Reid tree. Hey, these guys have been successful. It's just another guy off the Andy Reid tree. So to me, I don't know why this – well, I say I don't know why, but it's sort of pointing to we know why. But it's just unfortunate because if he doesn't leave Kansas City, he may not ever get a coaching job in the NFL. And that's unfortunate because he's been – however we want to slice this and however we want to say, well, Andy Reid had – you know, had sailed the offense. He's been there, Eric Bieniemy, the full 5 years Patrick Mahomes has been quarterback. He has had the label offensive coordinator ever since Patrick Mahomes has become the starting quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. And in that time, this team has basically ranked in the top five when it comes to offenses, all 5 years. And matter of fact, they won two Super Bowls in the process.
And been to three.
And I understand Andy Reid getting the bulk of the praise. But it's not like Bieniemy is just sitting over there not doing anything. You know, Andy Reid, there's a reason why Andy Reid, you know, brought up Eric Bieniemy's name after the Super Bowl. That was one of the first names he brought up. Mm-hmm. You know, because in his mind, he feel that Eric Bieniemy has done enough. And he shouldn't be – it shouldn't be like a thing you hold against me just because I am a part of the Andy Reid tree. Nobody else had to go through this. We see guys getting head coaching jobs that only had 1 year of success. This guy's had 5 years, however you want to slice it. He's been a part of a system that has been very successful over the last 5 years. And he can't get a coaching job, head coaching job anywhere. He has to go get an offensive coordinator job in another division with a team that doesn't have a quarterback. Mm-hmm. That's how desperate this situation, I think, has become for Eric Bieniemy, that he has to take that job to potentially get a shot at being a head coach. And if that doesn't go right, he's never getting a head coaching job. They're not going to look at it and say, well, he don't have a quarterback. He doesn't have this. No, they're going to look at it. He took the job. They didn't do well.
Yeah, I do think that that happens a lot to a lot of assistant coaches over the years, where you go into a situation and you just don't have a lot of luck with the horses, with the health, you know, the quarterback, the personnel to succeed. So that is the gamble. And you're right. It doesn't seem on paper like Washington would be the place to go. But, Derek, I'm with you 100%. I think he just reached a point. He said, you know what, I've got to leave. And here's a team that wants me. They've offered me the job. I'm not interviewing and competing and have uncertainty. They want me to be their guy. And I think that was enough for him to say, you know what, I like that. Here's a team stepping up. They want me there. I'm going to go there, and I'm going to show you that I can get it done. But who's the quarterback is a very important part of this here. But I wish him well, right? How can you not root for Eric Bieniemy for taking the leap of faith and saying, you know, I'm going to show everybody I am a play caller, and I'm going to make it work with this team.
And it is the ultimate bet on yourself situation. Because yep. I don't think anyone would look at what he's walking into in Washington and say, yep, those are clear. That's a clear path to success. But he could look at it like if Eric Bieniemy goes in there with, you know, all of the dumpster fire going on with ownership in Washington and with an unproven young quarterback in Sam Howell, if Eric Bieniemy can turn that offense into a top offense in the NFL, if Eric Bieniemy and Ron Rivera, you know, in tandem can get this team to the playoffs, then you could look at it and say, look, Eric Bieniemy proved himself. And some of the I don't want to say the worst situation, but not a great situation. Mm-hmm. If he can turn that team and that situation into a successful situation, then he absolutely is going to be the hottest coach, you know, potential coach on the market. It's a really, really tall ask. It's a really difficult situation going on in Washington. And I really hope that Eric Bieniemy is going to be able to turn this into the next step that he wants to take into ultimately being a head coach. I see some texts in the text line, a lot of people saying, you know, if Ron Rivera does get fired, then Eric Bieniemy could likelihood of being him named interim head coach is pretty high. Yeah. But that's no guarantee that you're going to get the head coaching position the next year.
No, because let's not forget this franchise is being sold.
Right.
So
they could want to clean exactly. house
completely. They could want to just clean house no matter what. You know, and go a whole different way. So, you know, like you said, Caroline, this is a truly a bet on me situation. I'm betting on myself. He does have a few, you know, players on his team, McLaurin, Samuel and Dotson. But besides that, those are all pass catchers. And I'm sure he can elevate their production out on the field. But a lot of that hinges on how the quarterback turns out.
Right. Good luck. I really do wish him the best of luck.
Yes.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Come here next. We'll get into your thoughts. We got a bunch of Predators thoughts, your Eric Bieniemy thoughts, Titan thoughts as well. Everything is on the table. We'll get into your phones coming up next. It's Caroline Willie D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game. Caroline Willie D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game in the Game Nashville app. Haven't given your phones enough TLC today, so unless you do have a thought,
let's go.
To the phones. Craig texts in. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. 615-737-1025. If you have a thought. Says, why do you believe that Eric Bieniemy was not interested in the Titans? I believe that he knew he was going to try to take some other opportunity, but why not the Titans? That's my question. And I only say that I don't believe that Eric Bieniemy was interested in the Titans because the Titans reached out for an interview. And the only thing that we heard that came from that was coming from Josiane Anderson, who said that Eric Bieniemy was more interested in head coaching opportunities and then goes on to become the offensive coordinator with the Commanders. So that's my question, is why not the Titans? If you do decide ultimately that you're going to move forward with an offensive coordinator position, why not even respond to the request?
The only thing that makes sense to me, Derek, is that he looked at it at the time that the request was made and said, okay, they're also requesting another guy on our staff, Matt Nagy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm clearly not the guy for sure that they want. And who knows who else that they're interviewing. He probably has an agent that's sort of gleaning this, right? Who, you know, trying to gain information. We know that ultimately the guy that was in-house was a clear-cut candidate and ended up getting the job. So I think he was thinking, all right, if I go in and interview with the Titans, I'm one of five, six candidates, however many people they talk to, And I can only assume that Washington made a play and said, we want you to be our guy. That's plausible. And, of course, I'm sitting here, you know, in Nashville. I don't know how it went down, but that would make sense to me. I think he was one of many candidates for the Titans, whereas I think Washington was like, we want you to be our guy.
Yeah, and if I'm not – I think I'm correct in this. I think they gave him the title assistant head coach as well. They're giving him the title not only as offensive coordinator, but as assistant head coach. And that's probably, yeah, that's probably something that the Titans were not going to give him. You know, and he sort of looked at it and looked at, you know, my opportunities for advancement. Would it be better in Washington or would it be better in Nashville? And obviously, from all reports, he will be named the new offense coordinator with the Washington Commanders. So I guess the title meant a lot to him because it probably gives him, like you said, gives him a little bit more responsibility. And then, you know, Ron Riviera, he's been dealing with health problems. He's battled cancer. Mm-hmm. And you just don't know how much longer he's going to want to coach, you know, in this league. And then they're changing – you know, management, you know, a new group is going to come in eventually. So this could be a way for him to, if things go right, to potentially be the front runner for a job that is not vacant just yet. It could be vacant in the next year or two. And if he goes in and does well, because, again, he does have pieces there in Washington, don't have a quarterback, but he has pass catchers. If they can figure out the quarterback position and he gets this offense to going, I don't even think they have to win. But if he gets this offense to going, then it opens up a few more doors for him as far as being a head coach. More importantly, it probably opens up the door that he's already in, to the room that he's already in as far as being a head coach. So I don't know if that was never going to happen here in Nashville.
Right.
He never was going to get the opportunity.
And that's a fair point, is the amount of responsibility. Not all offensive coordinator positions are created equally. Mm-hmm. I mean, we see that. There's a certain amount of responsibility that can be given or earned. Mm-hmm. He didn't get that in Kansas City.
No.
Now he gets that in Washington. He would not have gotten that here. Shane in the Borough texts in about the Predators and says, the Preds really need to quit hanging their hat on hopes and what-ifs. It's time to start building a team that is solidly in the playoff picture instead of a hopeful wild card. I think that's what every Predators fan wants to get to, is to the point where this team is consistently competitive in the playoffs. Now, how do you get to that point? You can start off by selling off pieces now, but that's the number one question, is how do you get to that point where you are a team that is consistently performing in the playoffs? If it was easy, every team would be doing it.
Right, and every team does want to do that. So you could take out Predators and insert any other team, you know, with that goal, that mission statement. So I think what the next five games are going to tell us is – And right now, with the step back that they took over the weekend and the fact that they're 2-4 since the break, it's moving you towards a different pathway. Is, you know, how do you get there the fastest? You might have to take a step back to take the two steps forward down the road. And, you know, how many steps back do you want to take? How radical do you want to get? I mean, these are all things that you have to consider depending on what happens between now and the end of the season. But that is the goal for every team. And they felt like they had a team that could get to the playoffs and have a better chance of succeeding in the playoffs. And they have not met expectations to this point in the year. And I'll say it like I did a couple of years ago. They looked way down and out with no chance. They won 20 out of their last 28. That's possible. But realistically, it is not probable at this point based on what they've done to this point in the season. But crazy things happen. That's why we love sports. But the question is how you get to that point.
One texter texts in and says, I don't understand the disappointment with Matt Duchene. He's at a franchise record for goals last year. What do fans want from the guy? He isn't part of the problem. The problem has come from the lack of development from young players and nothing from Granlund and Johansson. There's more to this text that I want to continue to get into. He absolutely is part of the problem. One of the roots of the problem is the top players not producing. The players who make the most money aren't producing. He set a franchise record for goals last year.
What happened to the years before that?
And what happened this year?
Exactly.
That's what matters, is that you're not getting anything from him this year. Now, is he overpaid? Yes. Should he have been signed to the contract that he was signed to, both the years and the amount of money and the modified no-trade clause? Probably not, but that's a David Poile problem. Mm-hmm. That's part of the problem as well, but don't act like Matt Duchene is not part of the problem of the best players not producing to the level that you need them to.
Yeah, it's an interesting observation. I would not separate Matt Duchene from the other group of guys. I do think Mikael Granlund and Ryan Johansson, you could have discussions about them too. Granlund in particular has taken maybe the biggest step back from the last 2 years, where I thought he was the glue and a guy that was really driving them, keeping them together, you know, playing a lot of different things, not just with the points, but his impact on the game. And I think sometimes we get caught up too much in how many goals and assists a person has. That is very, very important. At the end of the day, you got to score, right? But how also do your top players enable you to win? What are they doing besides? If they're not scoring on a particular night, are they driving offense? Are they putting you in the offensive zone? Are they setting up the next guy to be successful? Are they getting beat defensively? All of these things go in. And Matt Duchene, to me, has been okay. You know, I think I gave him a C- going into the break. And he surged. I think he's had some really good moments. You see what he can do when he's at his best. But it's just not – he's just not the driving force that I think he was last year on a more consistent basis. Just talking about him. Has he upped his grade from C-? Yeah, I think he's more of a C or C+, maybe. But still not what – I think he's capable of. And you could say that about a number of the players on the roster, which is why they're below what to me is the expectation level.
And when you're paid the amount that Matt Duchene is paid, the expectations go up.
It's higher. Yeah. There's more expected.
Absolutely.
I don't understand when people say things like that. It's like, listen, you may love the guy and I get it, you know, but the facts remain, you know, if you have a season like you did last year and then disappear this year, what does that tell me? It tells me that you're not a consistent player, that the money that they're giving you, you're not playing up to that dollar amount. So, you know, we look at you different than we look at everybody else that don't make the money that you make. You are one of the top three or four guys money earning wise. But your production doesn't say that. You gave one great year production. And before that, it was okay. And after that, it's been below okay. What do you mean he's not part of the problem? He is part of the problem that's going on.
What's the biggest critique, at least that I have, of this team? Inconsistency.
Yeah.
Some of your top paid players, Forsberg, Duchene, Johansson, their problems are inconsistent. It's not a coincidence that your top guys, your core guys, your veteran guys, your highest paid guys are the biggest problem with this team. Inconsistency. Mm-hmm. But I want to continue our Predators conversation coming up next, because Pierre LeBrun said that David Poile was focusing on these three things to decide what he was going to do with the trade deadline. So what were those three things, and what did the Predators team prove? We'll get into that coming up next. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Some teams are obviously buyers, other obviously sellers. And still others are right there on the bubble. Does that list include the Nashville Predators?
Yeah, they've not decided yet what they are, but the clock is ticking. And here's what I would say from making a few calls today is that the next set of games, you know, Thursday night against Boston, this weekend against Florida, and especially Sunday against Minnesota, those are huge games which could impact the trade deadline decisions for the Nashville Predators and GM David Poile. If they don't get on a heater like right now, to salvage their playoff chase, I'm told that David Poile will be ready to listen to almost anyone on his roster if he feels that his team has no chance to make the postseason. whether that's Duchesne or Johansson or Ekholm or Granlin. I think he'll be in a position to listen on a lot of his players. That's if they don't get on a heater here. We'll see how they respond.
There you go. That was Pierre LeBrun last week before the Bruins-Preds game. He said, hey, these next three games, Boston, Florida, Minnesota, so key in what was going to drive David Poile's decision, or what will drive David Poile's decision at the trade deadline. They go 1-2 in that stretch, drop a clunker to Boston. They look great against Florida, and they lose 4-3 to Minnesota in the final few seconds of the game. I've made up my mind, but I think these three games, if David Poile was going to use these three games, as Pierre LeBrun reported, I think those three games, all signs point towards sell. This team just isn't good enough. And I know that there are plenty of games left in the season. I know you got 28 games remaining. You got to win 40. You got to get 40-ish points some way, somehow. Give or take 40-ish points some way, somehow. And that's just to set yourself up in a position to make the playoffs. Never mind competing in the playoffs. For me, I want this team to be able to compete in the playoffs. I want this team to be competitive in the playoffs. I want more from this team than just being able to skate by into the playoffs. So I am ready to sell. If Pierre LeBrun is reporting these last three games are going to be one, or those three games, this set of games is going to be big for David Poile, I think this team told you all it needed to say. It's just not quite good enough to be competitive in the playoffs or to even make the playoffs at this point.
Well, I think what you have said for a while, Caroline, is, you know, they haven't looked like that even before these three games, right? But since the All-Star break, I think that's the unfortunate part. Like, going into the All-Star break, it looked like a team that was making a statement that they wanted to make a hard run for the playoffs, have a really good second semester. But they have not come out of the gate the way they wanted to here. They lost Philip Forsberg. Now, it's an interesting move they just made. They put Mark Jankowski on waivers today, and he's the only extra forward they have right now. And as we know, they just called up Phil Tomasino. I think they want Phil Tomasino to play for the rest of the season here. And so that leads me to believe, is there a chance that they've had some good news on Philip Forsberg? I don't know. That's something we probably won't know until tomorrow morning when the team gathers for the morning skate. They had the day off. They had the back-to-back games. So really, it's not, to me, it's not all condensed into what happened over the weekend, although Pierre LeBrun is right. But look, David Poile, if he's smart, and he is, he's been around forever, he's already been fielding the calls on probably everybody on his roster. You know, what's this guy worth? Is there any interest in this guy over here? If we were to fall out of it, what are we doing? But, you know, you're leading up to, you still have five games to go. I would be surprised if they made any moves before the deadline, but I would look to see what happens in these next five games. And if it continues on the track that it is, then I think that they'll see what's out there and if any moves can be made to help the team down the road. Now, if you're in that locker room, like I said earlier in the show, and you show up to work tomorrow, if you win the next five games, then that can change the script a little bit. But right now the script is of a team that's just a little bit short of expectations, and short of this expectation, that means not making the playoffs. But look, 28 games, a lot can happen. But so it's different perspectives. But the point is, for Pierre LeBrun, he's dead on right. If you're David Poile, you got to do your job. You got to look at what the team has been to this point, and you got to weigh your options.
Now, Willie, even with that, okay, here's a hypothetical for you. Say this team find a way to get themselves into the playoffs, and say they have an early exit in the playoff once again. Then what do you do as a franchise? What do you do as a GM moving forward? Because it's like, okay, yeah, we got in the playoffs. We can keep on playing this song over and over again, but we know how it's going to end. Eventually, we got to change the record. If y'all don't know what records are, it's that little vinyl thing, you know, that big vinyl thing.
The thing that goes round and
yeah,
round.
Yeah, go round
turntables.
And round. Exactly.
Yeah.
But,
I've heard of them.
But, you know, if you don't make any change, you get in the playoffs, then what you do?
Yeah, it's a great question. And look, as we sit here today, I'd love to be in that position, right? I'd love to be able to say this team could go. Because, Caroline, you said around 40. I don't know if it'll be 40 that you have to have points needed to get in between now and then. It's a sliding scale. It depends on how Minnesota and Calgary play. Does anybody else above them collapse? It does appear that everybody below the Predators has pretty much checked out. So could you get in at 95? Could you get in at 97? We don't know, but it's going to take minimum 37, 38 points. So what does that mean? 28 games? Can this team go 17-8-3? They haven't really, you know, with each passing week where you haven't gone on a heater, they're gonna need to win 5 in a row or 6 in a row or 8 out of 10 to get back up to that pace. And are they capable of it? Well, I don't know. You know, they've got UC Soros. If you get Forsberg back, anything can happen. But what's the probability of it? It's lessening with each week when they show you that they haven't, you know, what they've been is much more likely to be what they are. So let's take your scenario, though, Derek. They make a run and they do get in and they lose in the first round. That's a great question, is where do you go from there? Because it still would look like you're not quite equipped to do what you want to do, and that's do damage in the playoffs. And it's well documented where they are with a lot of the contracts. I would say that, and we had a texter earlier about the young players, the one thing that I do like is I like where Cody Glass is headed in his career. Let's see about Phil Tomasino. I really like Juuso Parsonen as a young player. And Tommy Novak had a huge game yesterday. There's another young player that looks like he could be a nice little piece. We'll see. But it's not like they have no young players that are helping them at all. And we talked about how their farm system is ranked in the top 10 of best prospects, more like 10, 11. But it's not bad. It's not like they have mortgaged the farm and traded off a bunch of draft picks. They've got some first-round picks in the minors and in the junior level that look like they've got some promise.
And the idea of, you know, if you get in the playoffs, anything can happen. That totally is true. You know, you can go back to so many teams in the past that you didn't think we're going to do anything in the playoffs, and they ultimately and get to the Stanley Cup final. I just, where it stands with this team, I don't want it to have to be a meltdown of epic proportions from the teams above the Predators in the standings in order for the Predators to just squeak into the playoffs. Because how much does ownership value getting into the playoffs? If that's all it is, hey, just get into the playoffs, you know, and if it's a first round exit or maybe you win the first round, you go on to the second round. And I don't know how much it truly is that ownership values making the playoffs. But let's say the Predators do barely squeak in, and then no changes are made, which I think there do need to be changes to this hockey club moving forward, then, you know, making the playoffs just kind of masks a lot of the problems that I think this team is facing.
Well, I think changes will be made regardless. Changes are made every year. And look, I keep talking about Toronto. They keep losing in the first round, too, and they make a ton of changes. And they're probably going to have to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round to even get to the second round. Who will they play? Probably the Bruins. So, I mean, there's only a few teams that are really satisfied with how they are at the end of the season. But it's a lot better to make the playoffs than not. And I think there's something to be said of, did you get the most out of your team in a given year? And right now they're below that line. I think that's what's disappointing about this particular season. I wouldn't have said that, and I didn't say that about last year's team.
That's going to do it for us today. Stillman & Company is up next. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m.
Peace.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.